We are going back to the book of Proverbs, where we have been for much of the summer. This morning's scripture is from the book of Proverbs, and the subject is money. And if you didn't bring a Bible and you don't have one on your smartphone, which you should, it's really easy to download. Just go Bible, and lots of apps you can get that are really easy. But if you don't have one, there's a Bible under the seat near you. And if you don't have a Bible at home, please take that with you, because we want you to have one and be able to read it. I'm going to be in Proverbs chapter 10. And that's page 534 in the seatback Bibles. Proverbs chapter 10, and I'll be reading starting at verse 15. Proverbs 10, verse 15. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. The poverty of the poor is their ruin. The wage of the righteous leads to life. The gain of the wicked to sin. Proverbs 11, verse 1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Verse 4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Proverbs 11, verse 24. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and the one who waters will himself be watered. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. Verse 28. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. This is the word of the Lord. So we're studying in the book of Proverbs, and we're looking at the subject of wisdom. And each week we have to remind ourselves of the definition. Wisdom is not less than being moral and good. It's much more than just doing what's right. It's much more than being moral and good. It's knowing the right thing to do, the right course of action to take, the right choice to make, and those great majority of life situations where the moral rules aren't clear, that the moral rules don't apply. What's the wise thing to do? Not just what's the right and wrong, what's the black and white, but in all those other gray areas, what's the best thing to do? It's the skill of living well in the sight of God and people. So, consequently, we love Proverbs. We love Proverbs because it's so very, very practical in the parts of life that we struggle with every single day. And one of those areas of life that you will make a complete mess of your life if you only follow the rules and if you don't have wisdom is this area of money. When it comes to money, we desperately need wisdom. When it comes to money, most of us desperately lack it. People who only look to the rules, who only look to what's illegal or what's against the rules in the area of money, are going to be destructively unwise in their lives. If you want to be wise, according to the book of Proverbs, in the area of money and finances and wealth and possessions, you need to know three things. God makes money a blessing, and he's wildly generous. Money is an incredibly dangerous spiritual power, and there is a way to break money's power over me. Number one, what Proverbs teaches, what is wise, is that God makes money a blessing, and he's wildly generous. Proverbs 10:22, the blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. So here's what's amazing. The basic attitude of Proverbs toward money is positive. Proverbs, wisdom, is positive toward money. And so if you have a money problem, the answer is not money. The answer is the Lord. And ultimately, it's not your employer who provides for you. God does. It's not General Motors. It's not the union. It's not the state of Michigan. It's not the federal government. It's the blessing of the Lord. And if the blessing of the Lord makes you rich, then our business is with him. And Solomon says in this proverb, he adds no sorrow. That means when you make money the blessing of the Lord, when you don't have to bend the rules, when you can keep your promises, you don't have to overwork yourself, your conscience can stay clear, you make enough money to share with others, that's joyful. There's no sorrow in that. When you realize that God blesses me with what I have and I can be generous with that. So Solomon says money is basically good. Proverbs 14:24. Wealth is a crown for the wise. The effort of fools yields only foolishness. So, why is Proverbs basically positive about money? Because God made it. Genesis 1:31. God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. When God made the world with immense potential for wealth creation. He made the money, the world rich, and he made it possible for us to have money and us to have possessions and us to have wealth. And so we have the cornfields of the Midwest around us. God made it all. We have oil under the earth. God made it all of it. According to Genesis chapter 2, God put gold and gems in the earth for our use. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that gold and the places of earth that are particularly prone to wealth are not evenly distributed. I don't think I have an oil well on my property. Maybe you do on yours, but I don't on mine, and I don't have a gold mine on mine. So it's not evenly distributed. So God created the world in which some people are going to have more wealth potential than others. When I was growing up, I used to watch the Beverly Hillbillies, and I was hoping that I could shoot the ground, and oil would spout out of the ground, and I would get rich and get to move to Beverly. But it never happened. So God gives some people more financial opportunities than others. Why? Why does God do that? Why does God allow some people to become rich and others to remain moderately middle class? Well, the answer is so they could share with others and become more like God himself, the ultimate sharer. Ecclesiastes 5:19, also by Solomon. When God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is the gift of God. You see, the biblical worldview is uniquely positive about the creation. Before the Bible was written, people in the ancient Near East saw the universe as a battle between the good gods and the bad gods. And the world was the leftovers of ultimate catastrophe. The world was a disaster. The world was basically bad. And the Greeks believed much the same thing. The Greeks saw the universe as an icky spiritual barrier to spirituality. The world was a bad thing. But the Bible resist every worldview that tarnishes the Creator and the creation. Our problem as human beings is not God, and our problem as human beings is not His creation. Our problem is that we look at God's creation and all of its splendor and we think, oh, this is how I can stop feeling empty. I'll make money. So we bring our sadness to the creation and we say to the creation, you are my happiness. And consequently, we make an idol out of our money. We make an idol out of our wealth. We make an idol out of our stuff and what it buys. And that idolatry is what brings sorrow to our lives. The Bible says in 1 Timothy 6:10, some people craving money have pierced themselves with many sorrows. So sorrow comes from saying, without this, I could never be happy. But the gospel gives us new eyes for everything. Now we look out at the creation and we think, if this is what God made, if this creation is what God made, then what better wealth could there be than in Him? The gospel makes us radically generous, refusing to tell God that His dominion doesn't extend over our wallets. So God gives us the earth and everything in it to enjoy. The Apostle Paul puts it this way, 1 Corinthians 3:21, all things are yours. So God makes money a blessing. He's wildly generous, and God wants us to create conditions where people have their material needs provided. He wants us to help others to have their material needs met. He wants us to help others to have money and to have food and have their basic needs fulfilled. God made men and women. He created us to make wealth, to be productive. Money and wealth is a blessing to us from God. Proverbs is very clear about that. You can't read through the book of Proverbs without seeing that there. Number two, the second thing wisdom about money teaches us is that money is an incredibly dangerous spiritual power. It's an incredibly dangerous spiritual power. Five reasons. Number one, money can corrupt your integrity. Money can corrupt your integrity. Proverbs 11:1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. You might be a person of great integrity. Maybe you're a person of intense honesty and character. But then in the presence of a lot of money, it's amazing how many people who had integrity lose it. And when Solomon's talking about a false balance, he's talking about dishonest scales, cheating on measuring, cheating on your taxes. Back in the day, people bought meat and grain by the ounce, and he's talking about falsely labeled weights. We get it, okay? We understand this. You're tempted to get more than you're owed. You're tempted to take more than you ought to take. And so Solomon is talking about deceptive business practices, false advertising, and our integrity can be eroded by money's powers. How many people who consider themselves godly would never dream of cheating on their wife on April 15th, lie through their teeth to the government? Number two, money can make you self-absorbed. Money has an incredible, dangerous spiritual power, and it can make you self-absorbed. Proverbs 11:26, the people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. I read an interesting blurb online just yesterday or the day before about the hurricane. Pray for those people in Texas. We should be praying that often the church shines the brightest when the things are the darkest, and we ought to pray for God to work in Texas. But I read about Texas that people were selling a carton of water bottles for $100. Now, that's gouging. That's price gouging. It's not illegal. As far as I know, this is extremely interesting here at Proverbs 11:26. This person is not being dishonest. He's being ruthless. The situation is a food shortage. There's a time of famine, and this guy's got grain, and he holds on to it. He's not selling his grain, even though people are hungry, even though people don't have enough to feed their kids. He's holding on to the grain in order to drive up the price so he can make a greater profit, even though there are people who are hungry. So here's the thing. This isn't illegal. It is ruthless business practices. It's heartless. So wisdom goes beyond the rules. It goes beyond the black and white, what is absolutely right and wrong, to what is good, what is helpful, what is best to others, what is best for the community. When you're wise, you're not thinking just about yourself. You're not just thinking about your own bottom line. You're thinking about others and the community around you. Proverbs condemns business that has as its only bottom line personal profit. Proverbs does not condemn personal profit. Don't misunderstand me. But if that is your only bottom line, you're not thinking of the community. And so what we ought to have as our non-negotiable bottom line is the common good, the good of the community. Proverbs 10:4, money can make you self-absorbed. Proverbs 10:4, a slack hand, talking about a lazy person, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Now, this is fascinating. Money can make you so self-absorbed that you become dependent on others. You're not contributing to the common good. You're lazy. Have you read the statistic? 95 million American adults are not working. I get it. A lot of people have good reasons for not working. A lot of people can't find employment, or they're disabled, seriously disabled, or they're elderly. There's lots of good reasons why people aren't working. 95 million? Many of those 95 million are simply self-indulgent. I deserve to do nothing. Really? God created us to do good, hard work. Our bodies thrive when we work. Our emotions are satisfied when we strive toward a goal and reach it. And when we have something to share with others as well, it really makes us happy. That's true wealth. Proverbs 10:16. The wage of the righteous leads to life, and the gain of the wicked to sin. According to Bruce Waltke, Bruce Waltke is a very major Old Testament scholar, Hebrew scholar. If you want to understand the book of Proverbs, he says, you need to understand something pretty radical. Every time you see that word righteous in Proverbs, here's what it means. The righteous, according to Proverbs, are those who value community as a bottom line in production as well as personal profit. The righteous are those who are willing to forego a greater profit for the common good. The book of Proverbs says the righteous are people who, the more money they make, the more life comes from them. Their money benefits the whole community, not just themselves. So I'm not in this thing just for myself, just to line my pockets. I'm not in this thing just to build up my IRA. I'm in this thing for the better benefit of people who are all around me. But money tends to make you self-absorbed. It tends to make you myopic, where you see nothing but yourself. You don't think of anything else other than your own bank account. Number three, why is money such a dangerous spiritual power? Because money can make you miss what's really important. Proverbs 11:4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath. And so Proverbs is talking about judgment day. Here's what this means. It's simple, but it's quite important. You know what judgment day, you know what the judgment day question is? What is my life amounting to? What am I really doing with my life? What difference am I making in the world? Who am I really helping? What contribution am I making? Wealth tends to blind us to those judgment day questions. Wealth sucks you into a frantic cycle, a cycle of consumption. It goes like this. I've earned more, so I need to spend more. And now that I've got to keep earning more, and I earn more, and that makes me spend more. But then after a while, I've got to earn more to keep up with my level of spending. So I'm spending more. And there's no joy in that, no contentment in that. That great, wise commentator on American culture, Bob Dylan. You give something up for everything you gain, since every pleasure's got an edge of pain. Pay for your ticket and don't complain, Silvio, silver and gold. Won't buy back the beat of a heart grown cold, Silvio, I gotta go. Find out something only dead men know. Rich money can make you miss what's really important. Number four, why is money such a dangerous spiritual power? Because money feeds your pride. Money feeds your pride. Steve Martin. I love money. I love everything about it. I bought some pretty good stuff. Got me a $300 pair of socks. Got a fur sink. An electric dog polisher. A gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater. And, of course, I bought some dumb stuff, too. Will Rogers. Too many people spend money they earn to buy things they don't want to impress people that they don't like. So wisdom, when you're wise, you realize that that money is feeding your pride. Money can make you proud. So what is pride? Pride is overconfidence. What pride is I am secure in the wrong things. I feel secure in the wrong things. It's the attitude that I can handle this myself. Proverbs 30, verse 8 and 9. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord?
Now that phrase, who is the Lord, is what Pharaoh said to Moses. Pharaoh was someone who said, I don't need God. Who is the Lord? And there's nothing like economic success to make you feel overconfident, confident in self. The more money you make, the more successful you are, the more you think you got it because you were so smart and so disciplined. And that means that you become overconfident in your own instincts, in your own judgment. You don't listen to other people anymore. And if you don't realize this, it's part of the syndrome of the addictive power of money over you. Proverbs 28:11. A rich man is wise in his own eyes, but a poor man who has understanding will find him out. You know what Proverbs is saying? A person who has no money, a person who is broke, a person who works a minimum wage job can be wiser about money than the rich person who's made money his God. Why is money such an incredibly dangerous spiritual power? Number five, money promises significance and security apart from God. In other words, I think I can't be happy. I think I can't be saved. I think I can't, my life can't have significance without money. Here's how we think. I'm going to quote someone else who dates me a little bit, that expert on disco culture, ABBA. Wrote this song 40 years ago. I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, money must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, 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 always sunny in the rich man's world. All these things I could do if I had a little money in a rich man's world. Proverbs 10:15. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. The poverty of the poor is their ruin. So, wisdom begins to recognize that there is a substantial risk for people who've got money. You and I. You and I. Not the person in the row in front of you who makes more than you do. Not the person two rows behind you who's driving a car 10 years earlier than yours. You and I. Okay? What the book of Proverbs is saying, and this is the great danger, is that wealth is their significance and security instead of God. Or I'll put it this way. There is no better alternative to significance and security in the world to God than wealth. If you're not going to have your significance in God, if you're not going to have your security in God, what's the alternative? Your money. Your wealth. There's no more plausible way to feel good about yourself and to feel secure and in control in the world than wealth. Wealth is the alternative to God, and it has enormous spiritual power. You remember in the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar up there on the wall, looking at all of his wealth, looking at all of his stuff, everything he's done. Is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence and for the glory of my majesty? And then he ate grass. In other words, wealth doesn't make you happier just in some general way. Wealth gives you your identity. It gives you your security. So, I want to challenge you. Rather than just sit there and say, well, I really don't know if this is true of me or not. A lot of you are thinking that right now. I don't know. I don't know if this is true of me or not. Let me answer that question. It is. It is. You struggle with this. I promise you. You struggle with this. In fact, what I really would like you to do is to not ask yourself whether you struggle with the spiritual power of money. You do. The question is, in which form, in which way does money have power over your heart? Some people mainly look to wealth for their significance, and other people look to wealth for their security. Tim Keller points out this really well, that if I'm looking to money for my significance, I feel important because of the clothes that I wear, or the car that I drive, or the house that I live in, or the phone that I carry. Did you go out and get a Galaxy Note number 8 this week? I'm safe and I'm secure because of money. I feel I'm okay because I've got money. I've got the best Blue Cross that money can buy. I drive a good car. I have a great job. It's the power of money. I'm trusting in these things, and I'm trusting in what my bank account can acquire for me rather than God himself. Money, more than anything else in the world, offers you significance and security apart from God. And all of us struggle with this. All of us. All of us. Now, if we were teaching from Proverbs this morning about adultery, Proverbs had a lot to say about that. And some of us could justly say, you know, I'm 85 years old. I no longer struggle with this thing. You know, it's not a big temptation to me. And you might be right, okay? Or you know, we can name another sins, and maybe you would be just in saying, I'm not sure I really struggle with this anymore. But money, you struggle with it. Every person must come to terms with money's power, because money is an incredibly dangerous spiritual power. So then we have to ask, how can I break money's power over me? Three things to know. Number one, first thing you have to do is to acknowledge the truth that money is a problem. Almost no one believes this. I'm trying to persuade you the best I can that almost nobody believes they're greedy. Almost nobody believes that I struggle with the power of money in my heart. They think other people do, but they don't think of themselves. Proverbs 11:1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord. He hates it. He abhors it. Now, think about this, folks. This word abomination is a word that is used in the Old Testament. Most of the time when that word's used in the Old Testament, it's talking about sexual sin. You know what this is saying? This is saying that you could be squeaky clean sexually. You could be absolutely, morally perfect sexually. But if you love money too much, God is just as offended by you and by your life as he is by the life of someone who cheats on his spouse. Well, you say, is my money really that important? Is greed and materialism really that big of a sin? You remember when Jesus encountered the Pharisees? You remember what Jesus said to the Pharisees? Matthew 23:25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the plate. Morally, sexually, you are pure as a risen sun. But inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. And they were blind to it. Americans are always saying stuff like this. I hardly have enough to live. I hardly have enough to make ends meet. I can't possibly live any more simply than I'm living. I really don't have that much money to give away. I really need all this stuff. The rest of the world knows better. The rest of the world looks at the level of how we live and they say, are you kidding? So, what is the mark of an addict? Say an addict to alcohol or drugs. What's the mark of an addict when it comes to money? How do you know if you are blinded or in denial because money has you in its grip? The mark of being addicted to money is that you confuse needs and wants. Ouch. Everything you want, you think is a need.
Boy, my wife shuts down my spending really fast by asking me that question. I need such and so. Really? Is it a need? Well, I want it. And maybe about right now, you're thinking this is getting a little uncomfortable. Mike, would you just not go there? Would you just stick with spiritual stuff, please? And if that's what you're thinking, then you're in denial. You cannot break the power of money unless you first acknowledge the truth that money is a problem. First step, you have to admit it. It is a big problem. Number two, how can I break money's power over me? Grasp the generosity paradox. The generosity paradox. What is the generosity paradox? Proverbs 11:24. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. So, this is a paradox. You get it, okay? A paradox is something that doesn't make sense. It flies against what should be obvious. It's saying the person who tries to increase decreases, and the person who is willing to decrease increases. And so... I think you could say that the metaphor comes from agriculture. You see this metaphor used cover to cover in the Bible from agriculture. In agriculture, you have to decrease in order to increase, right? In agriculture, you scatter your seed, and the more you scatter, the more you gather. The more you sow, the more you reap. If you hold on to your seed and say, oh no, I can't spare any seed, I can't give any away, then you're going to starve to death, and it serves you right. But if you're willing to scatter your seed and give it away, you'll gather. And the same principle is true of money. By the way, when you gather, it comes back in better form than what you scattered. So here's the great irony. The book of Proverbs says, if you love money too much, it leads to what? Overwork, overconfidence, ethical shortcuts, loss of community. And when those things happen, it's going to lead to stupider and stupider economic decisions in the long run. So here's the irony. The more that you can break the power of money in your life, the more you are likely to make good economic decisions. You're going to make good, wise spending decisions in the long run. Paul uses this same metaphor from agriculture in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. He's trying to get people to give to the poor. He's very concerned about their motives. They shouldn't give to the poor because he commands it. They should give to the poor because it's what's best for everybody concerned. It's the loving thing to do. It's the gospel. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. Paul is saying, on the cross, Jesus scattered. He was broken, and his treasure distributed to others. This is the gospel. Jesus Christ went to the cross, and he gave his life as a living substitute for me. He scattered. He gave it away. And Paul is saying, unless you see the cross of Christ as the ultimate scattering, as the ultimate generosity, as the ultimate scattering to gather, The ultimate place of wealth distribution, the ultimate place where the poor became rich in order to get real riches, until you see what he has done for you, until you're melted by that, you're never going to break the power of money over your life. The way to break the power of money over your life is see what Jesus Christ and how he handled his wealth and how he handled his life. He gave it away in order to get more back. The cross is that ultimate act of generosity is your security. The cross is your significance. If you believe in the cross, then you know that God cares for you and it gives you security that money can't buy. And if you believe in the cross, it gives you significance because you are a child of God. Blood bought by Jesus Christ. And when you see that and see his incredible generosity there, it breaks the power of money in your life. Now here's the good news. Christ still saves tight-fisted sinners, and he is gracious to us even when we're not.
This is the good news of Proverbs. Jesus Christ saves tight-fisted sinners just like me and just like you. Proverbs 11, 24 and 25 out of the NIV. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. So the reality is, selfish people end up poor in every sense. Open-handed people end up richer and richer in all the ways that really matter, in all the ways that really count in the long run. And if you don't believe that enough, that it redirects your money, you have to look to Jesus. Jesus Christ is wisdom incarnate. He is wisdom in the flesh, and wisdom trusts God. Wisdom fears God, and wisdom knows that selfishness is poverty, and generosity is wealth. I want you to see, again, the only time in the whole book of Proverbs there's a prayer. Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30. The only prayer in the whole book of Proverbs. And it's by a fellow named Agur. Really could think about naming your next son that. Agur. A-G-U-R. And it's pretty surprising stuff here. Proverbs 30, verse 7. What does Agur pray for? Two things I ask of you, Lord, do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. So, God, I'm praying that you would give me integrity, give me honesty, give me neither poverty nor riches. Give me only my daily bread. God, wealth isn't my ultimate goal. I'm asking that you would give me what I really need. Give me what I need. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. So he's saying, I want you to be my heart's treasure. I want to be delivered from the spiritual power of money and set my heart on things that really, really, really matter. Now, can God do this? Is God in the business of taking tight-fisted sinners and transforming them into trophies of his grace? Think about Zacchaeus, Luke chapter 19. You remember Zacchaeus? Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. He's described as being rich. He had lots of money. And he encountered Jesus. You remember the story of Zacchaeus? He had a radical heart change. Now, Zacchaeus' problem wasn't wealth. The problem is never wealth. The problem was that he was blinded by his money. And he was transformed by Jesus into a person with incredible generosity and justice and wanted to make things right and to not only give back, but to give back fourfold of what he had taken from others. And the story of Zacchaeus is the story of an incredible conversion of a greedy man. And what is so encouraging to us this morning is that God still saves materialists. And he still is in the business of healing selfish, broken hearts. And the only way to pray this Proverbs 30 kind of prayer with any hope of it being genuine is to see the glory of what Christ gives us. Jesus Christ gave himself away for us. He gave us all of his blood. He loves us that much. And I am his harvest. I am his treasure. I am his wealth. When I see that, that's what breaks the power of money. That's what breaks the power of money. Let's stand together. Father, you are the God of all creation. You are the creator and owner of all that is good, all that is rich. My prayer is that you would make us honest about our own hearts and turn us to you in desperation. We need help. We have so much. May we not depend on it. Give us neither poverty nor riches. But lead us, Lord, to rest in you, to fear you alone, and to trust you, because Jesus Christ has overwhelmed us with his riches and his glory through the cross of Christ. May your name be praised. Amen.